Okay, so I handed back the graded homeworks and quizzes. Let me just say a word about the homeworks. So I'm looking for effort on every problem. If there's, you know, some easy problems that there seem to be too many of them or whatever, come talk to me. I don't think I took off points if you didn't do one of the earlier problems, but the later problems, you can't just decide you're not going to do them. So those tend to be the harder, more challenging problems, the word problems or whatever. So if you have any questions about how I graded your homework, come on up after class and ask. I'll be happy to have the conversation. So just to kind of get oriented for this week, we have an exam on Thursday here in the classroom at the usual time, so try to be here on time. And I'm saying that less to you guys than I am to the people listening to the recording. So you guys are here, and that's good. So I know the roads are probably bad and it's miserable outside, but you still got to show up. So try to be here on time for the exam. We'll take homework questions, and then I'm going to lecture on section 2.7, so you have something fun to do over the weekend. And then toward the end of class, we'll talk about the test. So what I generally like to do is postpone test questions until the end. If you have homework questions, that's another thing. Or really anything, not just homework for this week, but anything since the beginning of the course. So let's have those questions now, if there are any. Question? No? Yes? What's the question? I mean, what's your specific question on this problem?
A.
A? Well, you can separate variables and solve, and they're giving you the I think they're giving you enough information to do that. I mean, what was the difficulty in doing it? Huh?
I'm looking for my notes.
Let me take other questions. Yeah.
So on homework, there's this thing dealing with what's the thing to do last class?
I'm sorry, what?
What's the thing to do last class?
What about last class?
The exact equations. So there's not equations that are not exact, but you can make them exact. If you multiply by something. Did you talk about that?
No, I did not talk about that.
Yeah, but can you do it?
Question 25 on 2.6, is that like that?
Yeah.
Number, I'm sorry, in 2.6.
25.
Okay, so we didn't talk about that, and I'm not going to hold you guys to that. So you don't have to do that problem. I mean, unless you want to, it's fine. Well, if I'm not holding you to it, then it's not going to be on the test. That's what it means to not hold you to it. So, yeah, there's an integrating technique or an integrating factor technique to change it into something that is exact, but let's not worry about that. So did you find your question, Raniel?
No. I just grab my notes. Disregard it.
Okay, I mean, it's... I think in order to solve the problem, you're going to have to solve the differential equation. This is number one on page 2.5. Other questions on homework? Yes?
Actually, I have a statement because I spent probably 2 hours solving that equation just to realize after I solved the equation that the solution to the equation is actually written in the chapter.
Yeah.
So if you look back to like 2 pages, it has both of the solutions.
Okay, yeah. Now, you sent me an email about another problem.
Yeah.
Did you get that one figured out?
I didn't know.
Did you look at the theorem?
Yeah. The theorem? Which theorem?
The existence uniqueness theorems for the linear and nonlinear.
I did.
You did. Okay. So which problem was it?
It was... If I can find it then.
That's in 2.4, right?
Number 13, part A.
So y prime is equal to
y to the 1/3?
Yes.
That was number 13 on 2.4.
Mm-hmm.
And y of 0 is equal to 0.
And it provides 2 solutions in the text. It shows y is equal to 0 if 0 is less than or equal to t is less than t naught.
So is there a solution that passes through the point 1, 1? If so, find it. So you have a solution. It's not hard to solve this equation, right?
No, it's not.
So, so 1, 1. Now, what's the theorem say? First of all, which theorem applies? Yeah, the second one, the nonlinear theorem. So, now, is it asking, let's see, it's asking if it's, is there a solution? If so, find it. Okay. And we're looking for, so either we call this f of t, t comma y. And so if f is continuous, or if partial f with respect to y is continuous, then the solution exists and is unique. Now, the looks like f is going to be continuous everywhere, so there should be a solution, but I guess without me working it out, do you have the solution?
The solution is plus or minus open bracket 2/3 open parentheses t minus t naught close parentheses close bracket raised to the power 3/2.
Okay.
You have a close bracket before 3/2.
Like that?
Yes. And that is if t is greater than or equal to t naught.
Okay, so t naught here would be 1. Is that, was it, did you use this to get this, or?
I used the initial value problem to get that.
Okay.
And that's the one I used in the book, right?
And that is also the one I used in the book.
And then anything below t naught is 0.
Not necessarily, because that's not part of this condition. There's a second condition where it says y is equal to 0 if 0 is less than or equal to t is less than t naught. But there is no limitation to 0 on t is greater than or equal to t naught. And the answer I kept running into online was t naught can't be less than 0, but I don't understand how that's a limitation if that's not included in the conditions for that solution.
Okay, now I see your point. Well, let me think about that. I mean, one thing I'm having a little bit of trouble with, and I have to work through it, because I don't want to try to work through it now, because I just think it's taking excess class time to do it. But the so what was the arbitrary constant when you did this? You don't have to. That's kind of, I'm speaking rhetorically now. So the theorem pertains to initial conditions, but you could treat that as an initial condition as well. And what effect would that have on the solution? So I think what's going on here, and I'll have to look into it a little bit, but probably you can't define an open interval. I mean, that's the reason the solution wouldn't exist, is you don't have an open interval that would include this one of these numbers.
As far as I can tell, when I graphed it just to check, I could slide it way past this y, 1, 1 and still see solutions left and right. So it seemed like there was an open interval with plenty of solutions.
Okay. Well, it could be a misprint or a typo or something, but let me look at it. So that is
2.4 number 13 part A.
Okay, so I'll take a look at that.
Thank you.
Other questions?
So only F or DF, DY have to be...
In order to have uniqueness as well as existence, both of these have to be continuous around the initial condition.
But for existence, only one has to be.
That's right. Now, we don't know how far it goes. And that's why you have to look at the solution. And it may be that something weird is happening. Like if, if this were a 1, and I don't know, let me think about it. But I think where people get in trouble is you're right on the hairy edge where it you don't have an open interval. So, yes?
And so in the text, when it talks about the solution to this particular problem, it gives like a, if t is less than t naught, then y equals 0. And then if t is greater than or equal to t naught, it does this thing here. And it says it considers that to be a solution. It also says that it's continuous and differentiable, which I was confused by.
You mean this is continuous and differentiable?
I'm talking about the solution that it gives. So y equals plus or minus all of that if t is greater than or equal to t.
Well, I'm having a little bit of a problem with the plus or minus as well. I mean, it's that's not even a function. Yeah. So let me just look at it and we'll talk about it. You won't have anything like this on the test, anything that's, you know, it'll be pretty obvious what's going on for the test. So that's one of the purposes of the homework, is to challenge you guys and make you look at it and think about it. But, okay, so other questions? Yes?
One question regarding the test. Are we going to have any questions where we have to solve some ridiculous...
So I'm going to talk about the test. I'm going to talk about the test at the end of class.
Okay.
I mean, what I want you to do is ask all your questions now rather than being guided by what I tell you is going to be on the test. That way, you know, get your questions answered, and then, I mean, you should have been studying for the test by now anyway, but let's just wait and talk about the test at the end of class. Other questions?
For the tank problem, I've had a lot of trouble. Like, I keep looking at the differential equation that is given for like the amount of material in
yes.
the tank, and I'm having trouble understanding how we get to that.
To the differential equation?
Yeah.
So if you have a you know, say a tank, and then you're having some some flow inward and some flow outward. Okay, and let's say you have some volume, and you also have some quantity Q, and let's say that they tell you that the rate going in is, I don't know, 2 liters per minute. And that the concentration is, let's say, I don't know, you know, 1 gram per liter of whatever the substance is, salt or whatever. And let's say what's coming out is also 2 liters per minute. So the volume stays the same. And now you want to write a differential equation that represents that. So dQ dt is equal to the flow rate in. So I would go 1 gram per liter times 2 liters per minute. And the liters cancel. That's the input to the tank. And then the output would be 2 liters per minute times, and then Q grams per liter. And so the liters cancel again. So the units are consistent. The units on Q are going to be grams. And so you get grams per minute out and grams per minute in. And so that's your differential equation. So... And notice the units on the left correspond to the units on the right. So grams per minute, assuming that T is in minutes. And I just made these numbers up. But you could solve that equation. It's not separable, but it's linear in first order. Okay, does that help?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, where it gets confusing is if Q is in concentration rather than quantity. Then it's harder to write down the equation. It's harder to understand what's going on, I think. But if you do it this way, it should work.
Okay. But if they give me Q as a concentration, then I would just...
Well, but we're not going to see that in this course, I don't think.
Okay.
And if it happens to be the case that that's happening, then you might want to recast the problem in terms of quantity rather than concentration.
Okay.
Or make it work somehow. But I'd have to see the particular problem. Other questions?
Number 5215.
We did this problem in class.
Okay.
Didn't we? We did parts A and B. Yeah, that's all there was. Yeah, I worked that out in pretty much quite a bit of detail in class. Did you have a specific question about it?
This is the one you did where
the cylinder. And some equilibrium height. Actually, it's some height, but it's... And then this was Torricelli's principle. So the alpha A square root 2GH or something.
Yes. Okay, I do remember that.
Okay. Yeah, it should be in your notes. I mean, they ask you to set up the problem and they ask you to find the equilibrium height. And you just take the derivative, set it equal to zero, and then solve for H. Okay. Other questions?
Generally, what do we do if, like, the solution to our different equation appears to be something like an ellipse?
Like an ellipse?
Yeah.
If it's so, there's nothing wrong with having an implicit function for the solution.
Okay.
In fact, I think that happens quite a bit. And you can still graph it. You can find the, you can apply the initial condition and solve for the the arbitrary constant. I mean, so implicit functions are okay. That's not really something to be avoided. Now, if you can solve for the function explicitly, then you might want to go ahead and do that. But there's nothing wrong with an implicit function.
And if we were to describe the domain of that implicit function, would it be all possible values like y and t or whatever variables?
Yeah. I mean, I'm assuming that t is going to go from negative infinity to positive infinity, or zero to infinity, or whatever. I'm not sure what the range would be for the y's, but yeah, I mean.
Yeah, well, I guess I had one that came out to an ellipse, and it looked like it on the YT plane, so it's you.
Okay, so then,
yeah,
so you're, now, ellipse on the YT plane, that seems a little weird to me.
I could have gotten the problem wrong.
yeah, we'd have to take a look at it.
Okay.
By the way, some of these more complicated problems, if you're having trouble, come see me during office hours. I sit there for an hour before class, and today nobody came to visit me. So, when that happens, I'm a little less inclined to spend half hour, 45 minutes on homework questions. You know, try to get here on time and then, or even a few minutes early and come ask me, and then we can have some quality time and spend, look at the particular problem. Just for future reference. Other questions? I'm happy to do this now so that we, not just the homework that's due today, but anything going back to the beginning. You probably have all that stuff figured out. Yes?
In light of that, I guess 2.4 number 15 was the one that I ended up in. But thank you.
Okay, so this is separable. So you solved it. And what's your question?
I ended up with y squared equals negative 4t squared plus c.
Well, okay, so let's do this one. Let's be easy enough that we can spend a little bit of time on it. So y prime is equal to negative 4t over y. And let's see, in each solved in problem, determine how the interval, oh, we're given, what is that, y of 1 is equal to y naught?
Y
of 0. Okay, so dy dt. So y dy is equal to negative 4t dt. Y squared over 2 is equal to negative 4t squared over 2 plus c, which is negative 2t squared plus c. And let's go ahead and apply the initial condition. So we get y naught squared over 2 is equal to c. So therefore, y squared over 2 is equal to negative 2t squared plus y naught squared over 2. Yes? Okay, now so multiply through by 2, you get y squared is equal to negative 4t squared plus y naught squared. 2's cancel. And then y is equal to plus or minus the square root of negative 4t squared plus y naught squared. And or we can look at this and say this is the same as plus or minus the square root of y naught squared minus 4t squared. And so the now obviously if t is 0, then we get plus square root of y naught squared, which is y naught. Now, it says, determine how the interval in which the solution exists depends on the initial value y naught.
So when I was describing this as being an ellipse in the yt plane, I multiplied out by 2, so we've got y squared equals negative 4t squared plus y naught squared. I moved the negative 4t over to the other side, and instead that's an ellipse.
Okay. So 4t squared plus
y squared
is y naught squared, and if you divide through by y naught squared, you get 4. So you get basically t squared over y naught squared divided by 4 plus y squared over y naught squared. Equals 1. Okay, so you're if y is 0, then t is going to be plus or minus why not over 2 so negative positive, and if t is 0 y is plus or minus y naught, so something like this. So is that what you got?
Yeah.
Okay. So your t can't be outside of this interval. And I think that's what they're asking you for. I mean, you probably could get there from just the equation. And that's where I was going with this. So t you can't take the square root of something that's negative. So t cannot be bigger than y naught over 2, plus or minus, which is what this is saying. Okay?
So for the domain, you would just describe t within negative.
Yeah, I think the conclusion would be t has to be between negative y naught over 2 and y naught over 2. So that's the kind of answer that they're looking for in that problem. Okay. I agree. You guys all with us on this? Okay. Other questions? Okay. So, those of you who came in late, I have homeworks and quizzes if you want to pick them up at the end of class, and then also make sure that you sign the sign-in sheet before you leave. So, what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about 2.7, which is substitution techniques. This material will not be on the exam on Thursday, so it'll be on the next exam. And so we're going to consider two different kinds of substitution techniques. One is we're going to call homogeneous substitution. And the other one is Bernoulli differential equations. So now when I say we could talk about homogeneous equations, but that might be a little ambiguous. And the textbook actually uses that terminology. A homogeneous equation could be something that has a zero on the right-hand side and things that only depend on y on the left-hand side. So that's a homogeneous equation. But that's not what we're talking about here. We're going to spend more time talking later about homogeneous equations and non-homogeneous equations. We have talked a little bit about it up to this point, but when they say homogeneous substitution, if you look at the discussion in the book, and it's probably worth doing that, they define what is called a homogeneous function of degree k, and basically it's if you had x squared minus y squared, let's call that m of x comma y, then that is homogeneous of degree 2, because if we substitute in x and then for y we're going to put y over x in for y, basically substitute for the y. So what we get is x squared minus, and then when you square this you get y squared Let's see, is that right? Say V is equal to Y over X, and then solve for Y, so you get Y is equal to XV, and then you square that, you get X squared V squared, and if we plug that in, then we get X squared V squared, and we can factor out the X squared, so you have 1 minus V squared, and so the degree of that is what gives you the degree of the homogeneous function. So, now you might say, why would anybody care about this? Well, it turns out that if you have a ratio of these functions, and they're both homogeneous of degree k, let's say, then you'll have an x squared upstairs and an x squared downstairs, and they will cancel. And so, that could give us the basis for our substitution. So, now I'm not going to repeat the whole derivation in the book. If you're interested, go take a look at that. Basically, what you want to do is you want to take, let's say you have a differential equation, and I've got a few examples here. So dy dx is equal to x minus 3y over y minus x. Now, based on what I said over there, what would the degree of the homogeneity be for the numerator?
One.
What about for the denominator?
One.
So if the numerator and denominator have the same degree of homogeneity, then this technique will work. Now, I want to point out that this equation is not separable. And, in fact, it's not linear in its present form. Yes?
Are you able to tell if it's are you able to instantly test whether it's homogeneity? Like just by looking at it?
Well, by doing this, or you can just look at the degrees.
Okay.
So now I'll give you some more examples as we go along, and so you'll be able to see. But basically, if they have the same degree, so this is degree 1, then it's going to be a homogeneous of degree 1. Now you can have like an x squared and a y squared, that would be homogeneous of degree 2, but in order for this to work, they'd have to both be, top and bottom would both have to be homogeneous of degree 2. And like I say, we'll see an example of that.
Okay, so it still works if it's x squared and y squared?
Yes. So, but I want to point out that, you know, as it stands right now, this equation, we wouldn't know how to solve this. Yes?
If top and bottom, if x is squared, does y also have to be squared? Like, do the x and y degrees have to match?
The terms in the numerator have to agree on the degree.
So
yes.
It couldn't be x squared minus 3y?
No.
Okay.
That won't work. I mean, it's not to say that you can't do another kind of substitution that would also fix that equation, but that would not be an example of homogeneous substitution. So when you see this, what you're going to do is you're going to say let V is equal to Y divided by X, and multiply both sides by X, so Y is equal to XV. And you can start there if you like. And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to substitute in. Now, by the way, we've got dy dx, but what we really want to do is we want to convert this into an equation involving v and x. So we're going to get rid of the y's. So what is dy dx? Well, dy dx is equal to both x and v are functions of x, so we have to use the product rule. So first times the derivative of the second, so x v prime plus second times the derivative of the first, which is v. So I'm going to replace the dy dx with x v prime plus v. On the right-hand side, we'll go x minus 3 times y over x divide by, I'm sorry, that's not right. Y is xv, and then xv minus x. And now this I can factor the x out from both the numerator and denominator, so we get x times 1 minus 3v divide by x times v minus 1. And now you see the x's cancel, which is what I said would happen over there. And now we have xv prime plus v is equal to 1 minus 3v over v minus 1. Subtract v from both sides, so you get xv prime is equal to 1 minus 3v over v minus 1 minus this v. Get a common denominator, so multiply top and bottom by v minus 1, so you get 1 minus 3v minus v times v minus 1, all divided by v minus 1. And so xv prime is equal to, now simplify, so you've got a minus v squared plus 1, so you get, plus v, so you get plus v minus 3v is plus, minus 2v, so 1 minus 2v minus v squared divided by v minus 1. And now this is separable. And once it's separable, then you can solve it by integration. So let's separate. So this is x dv dt, or I'm sorry, dx. So I'm going to multiply by the reciprocal of this fraction and multiply both sides by dx over x. So we get dx over x is equal to v minus 1 over 1 minus 2v minus v squared times dv. And you can see it's been separated, and now we can integrate both sides, and you can get the solution for v. Now, once you have v, then you go back and you say, whatever v is that you get from this process, from the integration, replace that with y over x, and then solve for y, and you have the solution to the original problem. Now, it seems like there's a little bit of algebra there. It's not too bad. The problem is going to be in these integrals. And this is, you know, I've been playing around with that integral a little bit. It's not hard, but this is not an easy integral. Anybody have an idea of how to do this integral? Well, if you do a u sub, you don't get the top. And so...
the top times 2.
No, because you're gonna get a minus 2, and here you have a minus 1. And besides, when you multiply by negative, you're actually going to get a... Here, let's just do it. Convince you that it doesn't work. So if u is equal to 1 minus 2v minus v squared, then du is equal to negative 2 minus 2v and times dv, right? So now if I factor out a negative 2, we get equals negative 2 times v plus 1 times dv, but this is v minus 1. So you probably could get there by, let's say, you know, add 2 here and subtract 2 in the next integral, and so turn it into two integrals. One of them, now, an easier way to do it is probably partial fractions. Now, this is factorable. But the it's not a nice integer. So, you know, doing that would be a little bit of work to do partial fractions, but it will theoretically it will work. So you can expand that and integrate it that way. But the point that I'm making, and we're going to see examples where we can work it all the way through without too much difficulty, by doing the substitution, so v is equal to y over x, if it's of the form homogeneous substitution, then you take an equation that's not separable and not linear and turn it into something that is separable, and you can do the integral. At the worst, you can look it up, right, in a table, or you can, I mean, that's, we're to that point where sometimes the integration is just not something we want to do for fun. Questions on this? I'm going to show you a couple more examples of this. Yes?
So, I understood the algebra, but the only thing that is like, so we had that function originally, dy dx equals x minus dy over y minus x, and then we, so the basis was that we just said v equal to y over x.
Yes.
And then where did we get that from, that dy dx equals x v prime?
Well, if you multiply, so v is equal to y over x, so y is equal to xv,
yeah.
And then differentiate. So I have to get rid of the dy dx because I'm getting rid of the y's. Mm-hmm. Substituting out all the y's. So what is dy dx? Well, v is obviously a function of x. So when we differentiate this with respect to x, you got an x here and then you got a function of x here, so you need to do the product rule. Mm-hmm. And that's how we get this. And in this kind of problem, you're always going to have that.
It's always going to be that.
Always going to be that way. I mean, depending on your choice of the variable names. But yeah, in this case, I think the book uses U. I prefer V because then I can come back and do a U sub to solve for V. But that's just a personal choice. Does that help?
And then we just substitute Y in.
Yeah, so this gets substituted in wherever there's a y up here, and then you simplify. So we did that, right? So we substituted in y is equal to xv here and here, and then the x's will cancel. And now it's not obvious yet, but at this point it is separable. And so then I go through the process and finish it, and then we get here, which is, now we know we can solve that. You had a question?
So you're saying that the form dy of dx equals x d prime plus v, you can use that on every one of these problems?
I've not memorized that. Don't. You know, so a lot of these procedures that you're going to be seeing throughout the course, you're going to get sometimes the same thing over and over again. I think it's dangerous to try to memorize those things. Because somewhere along the line, somebody's going to come in and trip you up with, they're going to change the name of a letter, you know, some variable name, or your memory isn't going to be perfect. Just work it out. That's what I do. I see y equals xv, and then I take the derivative.
But that's always going to be the same case. Y equals xv.
I think so. If this is the substitution, and if you have a dy dx, then you would always have the same thing. But again, all I'm saying is don't try to memorize it. I think that's not a safe thing to do.
And I said the same question as him. Yeah, can you still walk us through how you got that dy over dx?
First times derivative of the second plus the second times the derivative of the first. It's just the...
It's implicit differentiation.
No, it's not. V is a function. It'd be like if I said...
Product rule?
It's a product rule. It's just straight up product rule. I mean, there's nothing implicit about this function. Y is explicitly solved. We're taking the derivative of that. Other questions? So we're all good on this? Okay. So I mean, you might want to play with this a little bit. This is factorable, but you get a square root of 2 as one of the terms in the factors. And so it makes it harder to do the partial fractions expansion, but I think it's still doable.
Can you show us really quickly how you would factor that to get that square root of 2? Because it's been a while since I've seen that method. I can't remember what it's called, like perfect square.
No, it's not a perfect square. 1 minus 2b minus b squared. So I'm going to write that as negative of b squared plus 2b minus 1. And if I want to factor that, then I use the quadratic formula. B is equal to negative b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac all over 2a. And so this is equal to negative 2 plus or minus the square root of 4 minus 4 times 1 times negative 1 all over 2, which is equal to, so negative 2 over 2 is negative 1. This is going to be square root of 8, which is 2 square root of 2, but divide that by 2, so you get plus or minus square root of 2. And so what is this? Negative b plus, so minus 1 plus the square root of 2. I don't mean that. So v minus, you do bracket here. So v minus the negative 1 plus square root of 2 times v minus negative 1 minus the square root of 2. The minus sign here is from up here. So then this becomes v plus 1 minus the square root of 2 times v plus 1 plus the square root of 2. So with the minus sign in front. So I just factored it. Now, if the determinant is negative, then you can't use partial fractions, but you can use you can complete the square, and in the denominator you'll have something which is something squared plus something squared, and then it's an inverse tangent, probably. Any other questions about this? Okay, let me do another example. So y prime is equal to x squared minus xy. Divided by 4y squared plus 6x squared. Now, does this conform to our requirement? Sure. You got degree 2, degree 2, degree 2, degree 2. XY is degree 2. Because when you substitute in the VX, you're going to get an X squared from this term, and you got an X squared from this term. Remember, the substitution is Y is equal to, I'm sorry, V is equal to Y over X, which implies that Y is equal to xv, and so x times xv is x squared v.
Then what about the v?
What about what?
The v. There's an extra v that's on our...
Well, the x is canceled. So let me show you what happens. Now, there's a couple of ways you can do this. I'm going to go ahead and substitute...
There's going to be an extra v. It's going to be x squared v.
It's not an extra v. It's a v.
Yeah.
Okay, and it's supposed to be there. So it'd be 1 minus v upstairs, and then whatever it is downstairs. So you get x squared minus x times xv divided by 4 times what? X squared v squared plus 6 x squared. And now factor out the x squared upstairs, you get x squared times 1 minus v. Downstairs you get x squared times 4v squared plus 6. And the x squared is canceled. And now it's separable. Actually, not yet. So this has to be replaced. So you get... So again, differentiate. So you get dy dx is equal to v plus x v prime. So we get v plus x v prime. Subtract v from both sides. So you get x v prime is equal to 1 minus v over 4v squared plus 6 minus v. Now we got to get a common denominator, so we get 1 minus v over 4v squared plus 6 minus, and then multiply top and bottom by 4v squared plus 6, so you get minus v times 4v squared plus 6 divided by 4v squared plus 6 equals, distribute, so 1 minus v minus 4v cubed minus 6v all over 4v squared plus 6, and then simplify this, and then you can see it's separable. That's another one that the integral is not going to be pleasant, but now I'll do one where we can do the integral. So I'm just showing you that when we have this kind of form of the equation, and by the way, the textbook actually multiplies this out and shows it as m dx plus n dy equals zero. We've seen this before, but unfortunately, these are not exact. So you can have this form and not be exact, right? We saw that last time. So you can write this in this form, but it's not exact, it's not separable, it's not linear, first order. So you need some other technique, and this substitution gives you that technique. So now this is not simplified yet, but if you simplify it and then separate and then integrate both sides, you can see where to go next. And again, that integral is not pleasant. I mean, it's doable, but it's just not straightforward. Okay? Questions? Okay. Now this one was kind of interesting. It's not homogeneous, but I want to show it to you anyway. So y prime is equal to x squared plus xy over x cubed plus x squared y. Now, it turns out the homogeneous substitution will work on this. So you can't count on it always working in a situation like this, but it does work. And if you actually go through all of the steps, you'll see that not only does it work, but it produces a very easy to get answer. But there's something else going on here, which I thought was interesting, so I want to show that to you. So if you just go ahead and factor out, you see, you can even, so this is degree 2 upstairs, degree 3 downstairs, but it's written in a form that you don't have to do a substitution, actually. So you get x times x plus y upstairs, factor out the x squared, you get x squared times x plus y downstairs. The x plus y's cancel, x over x squared is 1 over x, so 1 over x is equal to y prime, which is dy dx. So this is super easy, right? So you get dx over x is equal to dy, you integrate, so you get ln x is equal to y plus c. You could either solve for x or, I've solved for y. So y is equal to ln x plus c, it's arbitrary. So that was super easy. So sometimes, you know, and by the way, I'm notorious for sometimes giving these really easy problems on tests. If you I give you something that looks like this, and you freak out, right? But if you just look at it a little bit, you don't even have to do a homogeneous substitution. In fact, you might even think that the homogeneous substitution wouldn't work. It does, but you wouldn't have, you wouldn't see that necessarily. So but look for ways of simplifying. Try to rewrite the equation. And sometimes, a little bit, I think some people are just so in a hurry to get into it, and then I like to remind people, the hurrier I go, the behinder I get. Have you heard that expression? It's sometimes you just want to slow down, step back, take a look at the problem, maybe spend a couple minutes looking at the problem before you dive into it, and often that has a, it makes it a lot easier. So, let's do, I like this problem, so... Any questions on this before we erase it? Okay, so now this is actually problem number 10 in 2.7. So y plus x e to the x divided by y. Times dy dx. Equals y e to the x divided by y. Now this x over y is practically screaming that substitution, right? This is one that it is homogeneous of the form homogeneous substitution. You might have to do a little bit of work to put it into the form to see that. And they're not polynomials, they're exponentials now in these cases. So it doesn't change the fact that it's still homogeneous substitution. They're homogeneous functions. So, it's screaming that substitution, but it's got this weird x over y instead of y over x. Right? If you say v is equal to y over x, then you're going to have a 1 over v here, you're going to have a 1 over v there. There's some things going on that... Which is not a problem. You can work it out. In fact, I suggest that you try to do that. It only adds a few more steps to your process. If you're careful, you'll get exactly the same answer as the way I'm going to do it, which is a little easier, I think. So, again, sometimes if you just step back and think about it a little bit. So, notice I got an X here and a Y here and a Y here. And if I just divide through by, now if I divide through by X, then I get Y over X, and then I get X over Y. And that's, I don't know, that's weird to me. The fractions isn't the problem, but it's the fact that they're, in one place it's X over Y, in another place it's a Y over X. So what I'm going to do instead is I'm going to divide through by Y. And so each term gets divided by Y, so I get a 1 plus X over Y, e to the x over y times dy dx. Now that dy dx is now, you know, the thing that looks a little weird to me. Equals, divide both sides by y, so you get e to the x over y. And I'm going to do one more thing. I'm going to multiply both sides by the reciprocal of dy dx. So I'm going to turn it into 1 plus x over y, e to the x over y, is equal to e to the x over y times the x dy. So I'm turning the whole thing upside down. Now, because of this, it's going to be a lot easier to solve. And now I'm going to use v is equal to x over y instead of y over x. Again, it works just fine if you do it the other way. But I think you add some steps to it, and it you got like a 1 over v in the exponents, and you got other v's, that 1 over v's elsewhere in the problem. So now, if you have, and this is why you don't want to memorize this thing. Because here, I'm going to do what? I'm going to multiply both sides by y, so we get x is equal to vy, and then what are we going to do next? Differentiate. Because we need the dx dy. So dx dy is equal to, well, we're differentiating with respect to y, so this is a product rule situation. So you get v, so first times derivative of the second with respect to y, so v plus, and then the second times the derivative of the first, so y v prime. And now I've got 1 plus v e to the v is equal to e to the v times the quantity v plus y v prime. Distribute, so 1 plus v e to the v is equal to v e to the v plus y e to the v times dv dy. Now the v e to the v's cancel, and so what you get is 1 is equal to this, so 1 is equal to y e to the v dv dy, and that's of course separable. So so I multiply both sides by dy and divide both sides by y, so we get dy over y is equal to e to the v dv. And now integrate both sides. And so you get ln y is equal to e to the v. And I'm going to put the constant here. So ln y plus the constant C is equal to e to the v. And now, solve for solve for what?
Solve for what?
No, you want to solve for B. You don't want the thing to be in terms of B, because the V is going to be in terms of Y, and so you're not really solving for Y when you do that. You want to solve for V, and then you can get everything in terms of either X or Y. So I'm going to take the ln of both sides, so we get V is equal to ln of ln Y plus C. Now, V is equal to what? X over Y. So X over Y is equal to ln of ln Y plus C. And now multiply both sides by Y. So you get X is equal to Y ln of ln Y plus C. Now you're thinking, well, wasn't this differential equation an equation solving for Y? Not necessarily. I could rewrite this very easily and have a dx dy and solve for X. And that's what I did. And so we solved for X instead of Y. And if you think about it, you can't solve this for Y. It's impossible to solve this algebraically for Y. So might as well solve it for X. So treat X as the dependent variable and Y as the independent variable in this particular case. It's a little unorthodox, I think, but gives you a solution that's workable. Questions about this? So again, when you look at a problem like this, you see the form of it. You step back and you look and you say, hey, there's an X over Y, there's an X over Y, there's a Y and an X and a Y. If I divide through by Y, I can get X over Y here, and I can get rid of this Y. And so you get everything in terms of X over Y, and then you do that substitution, and it ends up working out nicely, yes?
How can you tell it's homogeneous in the first place?
I haven't proved it, and I don't know that I want to try at this point, but...
On the test, we can say you solved using this method.
No, I won't say that. I mean, there will be times when I'll say, yeah, I want you to solve this by doing something, but don't count on me telling you how to solve the problem. So... You look at this and you see an X over Y and you think, that looks like the homogeneous substitution method. So go ahead and do homogeneous substitution. I mean, or else pick another approach, which I think in this case might be hard to do. I mean, the real challenge for a student in differential equations is not only to learn the techniques, but also to figure out when to apply the techniques to which problems. And everybody has that problem. I mean, I certainly sometimes struggle to decide what's the right way to solve an equation. Okay? Okay. So I have other examples of this, but I want to switch over to Bernoulli, and I think I'll do one example of Bernoulli, and then we'll talk about the test. So I'm going to erase all this. Now there are other substitution methods in differential equations, and we'll see some later on in the course. But at this stage, these are the two that we need to be concerned about. And again, these are not going to be on this next test, on the first test, they will be on the second exam. So just because we're talking about it now doesn't mean that you can forget about this. Do the homework and remember when you're studying for the second exam to include this material. Okay, so Bernoulli differential equation is of the form y prime is equal, or I'm sorry, plus p of t times y is equal to q of t times y to the n, where n can be any real number. Now, if what we've seen so far for linear first order equations, n would be 0. If n is 1, you get a y, you can just subtract this from both sides, and you get it's actually separable. It's first order, linear, and separable. So for any other values, so I'll say n not equal to 0 or 1, then we're going to do this substitution. And again, the textbook develops this technique kind of roundabout, in my opinion. But what you really need to remember, and if you're going to memorize anything, you memorize the substitution here. So I'd say v is equal to y to the 1 minus n. And again, I think the textbook uses u instead of v, but, and I've said why I use something different than u. So n is this number right here. So whatever that is, and by the way, it could be any real number. It could be pi. It could be square root of 2. It could be, you know, some weird thing up here. As long as it's a real number, and you probably don't need to do it if it's 0 or 1. But for any other number, then you substitute y raised to the 1 minus n and work through all the algebra and whatever, and that will give you a solution. So let's take an example. Y prime minus 2y is equal to negative 4y squared. Now, everything up to the y squared looks fine. We could do integrating factor on that. But the y squared throws a wrench in there. It's not linear first order, so integrating factor is not going to work on that. And so what you need to do is do this substitution. So n is 2, so v is equal to what? Y to the 1 minus 2, which is y to the negative 1, which is 1 over y. And so y is equal to v to the negative 1, 1 over v, which is v to the negative 1. And now we're going to have to substitute this in everywhere we see a y, and in particular y prime. So here's the situation where we need to do the derivative. So dy dt is equal to, so this is, now this is a chain rule situation. V is a function of t, so we're going to differentiate with respect to v first, so we get negative v to the negative 2 and then dv dt. And so dy dt can be replaced with negative v to the negative 2 dv dt.
But
how is v a function of t? Well, because y is a function of t.
Oh, and y is a function of t.
So let's go ahead and plug this in. So we get negative v to the negative 2 dv dt. for the y prime term minus 2 times y, but y is 1 over b, or b to the negative 1, equals negative 4. Now y squared, y is 1 over b, so y squared is 1 over b squared, or b to the negative 2, 1 over b squared. Now if we multiply through by b negative, let's get rid of this negative sign as well, so multiply through by negative b squared, this coefficient goes away, we get dv dt plus, because we're multiplying by a negative sign, and then v squared over v is v, so 2v equals negative 4. And now we have an equation that is linear first order that we can solve with an integrating factor. So mu is equal to e to the integral of 2 dt, which is equal to e to the 2t. So you get e to the 2t times dv dt plus 2e to the 2t times v is equal to negative 4e to the 2t. Now on the right hand, I'm sorry, on the left hand side, that should be d by dt of mu times v, which is e to the 2t times v. And let's just verify that. So first times the derivative of the second, plus second times the derivative of the first, so that's correct, equals negative 4e to the 2t. Multiply both sides by dt and integrate, you get e to the 2t times v is equal to negative 4e to the 2t dt with an integral sign. And this is negative 2e to the 2t plus c. And then multiply by e to the negative 2t, you get v is equal to negative 2 plus c e to the negative 2t. Everybody following? Easy. But what is v?
1 to the negative 1.
Y to the negative 1. So this is equal to 1 over y. So now I take the reciprocal of both sides. So you get y is equal to 1 over negative 2 plus c e to the negative 2t. And that should be our solution. Okay? Yes?
You said you multiplied the size by minus v squared. But if you multiply by minus v squared, it's not making it plus square.
Oh, you're right. So that should be a plus 4 here. Yeah. Okay, good. Thank you. So this is plus. I thought this was supposed to be a plus. Let's see. So that minus goes away. That minus goes away. This goes away. So that. Okay, good. Thank you. That's correct. I knew I could count on you, Samuel, too. You're good with those details. Okay. Any other questions about this?
So we always make it into a form that's getting solved?
Yes. So this will always produce linear first order in V. And then you can solve that. And then now, it may not be 1 over Y. You know, maybe something more complicated. But you can then solve for y after that.
So v is always fixed, though. V is always y.
This is the substitution that you want. So v is equal y to the 1 minus
x. Always.
Always the case for this kind of equation. Now, I mean, one thing, when you look at this, there are many different kinds of differential equations. This just happens to be one. So this substitution may or may not work on other in other situations, but it will definitely work in this if it has this form. Other questions about this? Okay. So how are we doing? Was this, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, when I first learned differential equations, I thought substitution techniques were the harder stuff, because it forces you to remember the substitutions. You know, a lot of times you're solving an equation, I guess you still have to memorize the integrating factor technique and, you know, stuff like that. But with these substitutions, you have to remember a particular form and a particular substitution. So we're only doing two now. I think we'll pick up another one or two throughout the rest of the course. Okay, so let's talk about the exam. By the way, while I'm at it, let me just go ahead and do this. Riley? You're an A? Am I pronouncing that right? Ted? David Talbot. Yeah. And Matthew. Tyler. Eduardo. And again, don't forget to sign the sign-in sheet. Okay, so I have a test in front of me, and let me just tell you about it a little bit. It's 8 pages and 10 problems, and so the first two problems, I give you an equation and ask you to find the phase line graph and the some possible solutions. One of them is a population model, and the other one is not, but it's still autonomous. So they're both autonomous systems.
Or say the population line and line.
Yeah, both. I mean, you don't have to remember the details here. The test will have all of the instructions on it. But yeah, be able to do both. And by the way, I always reserve the right to make modifications after we've had this discussion. But generally, by this point, I've pretty much locked it down. In fact, I've printed it out and made copies. So we're ready to go. That was problem one and two. Problem three, I'm just asking you to demonstrate that a solution satisfies the differential equation. Show all work. Problem four is two parts, and they're both linear. So what I really want you to do is, for this test, focus on the linear existence and uniqueness theorem and be able to apply that. I'm not asking for a non-linear problem here. And basically it just says, does the solution exist, and is it unique? And what is the domain, and why? And the why could be, I expect you to reference the theorem, but other than that, you don't have to write a long dissertation on why. Just, you know, say the theorem says this, and this is what's happening in the problem. Does that make sense? Okay, problem five, give me a differential equation to solve. Now, there's going to be a few of these, so I'm not going to tell you how to solve it. You just get to solve it. Sometimes I give you an initial condition, sometimes not. So this one, there's no initial condition. Problem six, solve the differential equation. Problem seven, solve the differential equation. There's an initial condition. Problem eight, solve the differential equation. Problem 9 and problem 10 are word problems. It's generally my policy not to talk in any detail at all about the word problems, because it's too easy to go look it up in the book. By the way, these problems come straight out of the book. If you know how to do all the problems in the book, you're fine. Now, the equations expect, you know, one or two or three to be separable, one or two or three to be linear first order, and you need an integrating factor. Probably one of those is going to be exact or not exact, right? So if you think it's exact, show me that it's exact, and then use that fact to define the solution. And then again, what we did today is not on the test. It'll be on the next exam. So any questions about the test? Yes?
Can you repeat the step out number three?
So it's, I give you an equation, and I give you a solution, and I ask you to show that the solution satisfies the equation. So I'm not asking you to find the solution. I'm asking you to verify that it's a solution. Other questions on the test? Yes?
It's basically 1.1 through 2.6, right?
That's right.
Cool.
Any other questions? Okay. So I know some of you, huh? Questions? So some of you have difficulty getting here on time because probably you have, like, a job and stuff like that. I appreciate that. You know, probably let you, depending on how things look, I mean, if there's still a lot of people here at the end, 7:45, I might let you go another 15 minutes, but maybe 20 minutes. But I believe in timed tests. I think that that's a discipline that you should have. And also, you know, so try to get here on time if you can, at all, if it's at all possible, and then you'll have the whole time plus maybe a few extra minutes to do the test. Yes.
Rules on calculator.
You can use any calculator. I don't think it'll help at all. But yeah, no calculus calculators. You know, TI-89 and those kinds of things are out. But otherwise, yeah, graphing calculator, you can definitely use that. Any other questions?
Where's the trash bag?
I think they always put them out in the hall. kind of weird. But
84?
84 is fine.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine. 89,
yeah.
No, 89. Well, the thing is that, you know, the 89 has a computer algebra system which can actually do the integrals, and I don't want that. Yes?
If we are running out of time and we leave a solution in an integral form, like y is equal to e to the integral blah 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 blah, and we don't actually solve
it. Well, I do get partial credit.
Okay.
But, you know, don't count on a lot of partial credit if you just run out of time. I mean, show me some work, and sometimes the hard part of the problem is that integral. So, you know, make a good effort on that. And you might want to review, and I'm saying this to everybody, review your differentiation formulas and integration techniques. And, you know, don't come in here thinking that you don't have to do any work except, you know, maybe separating the variables and writing an integral sign, because it will be more demanding than that. And also, let me just remind you that blowing it out of the first test makes it really hard to pass the course. So, assume the worst. Assume that you're going to come in here and it's going to be god-awful hard. And prepare on that basis. And if it turns out to be easier than that, great. But don't think for a minute that this is going to be an easy test. For one thing, it's 10 problems. And all of them are a little different. So it's not cookie-cutter type stuff. So make sure you know all the techniques. Make sure that you practice. If you haven't finished the homework, a good thing to do, even though I won't take late homework, but try to finish the homework. Yes?
And he still wants to bring in the homework.
Yeah, the homework is due this week. So bring it, and I'll have a cover sheet. And let me provide the cover sheet. There's at least one person in here who's printing his own cover sheet. So don't do that. Just use the cover sheet that I provide. And
I'm sorry. What sections would that be?
I'm sorry, what?
What section would work due this Thursday?
242526?
Okay.
Okay, well, that's it. Good luck. Study hard. I'll see you guys on Thursday.